Because if you understand yourself and you know who you are and what you stand for and your values specifically, then as you move through life and make choices, they'll be yours and you will own them. Yeah, you'll be influenced by others, but you'll own them. Then as you parent, you'll own that. It's yours. And that feels really, really good.
Welcome to the Real Life Parents, Real Life Answers podcast with Sean and Jasmine Turner, and sponsored by ParentEQ.com. Hello, and welcome to another episode of Real Life Parents, Real Life Answers. My name is Jasmine. My husband Sean and I host and produce this podcast together, but kind of separately. This episode is an interview that Sean had with Anna Robbins, who is an amazing mom, and who talked with Sean about some of her struggles as she parents as a single mom and just with society in general and some of the stigma that we have surrounding motherhood. I think you will find some amazing insights about parenting according to your truth and doing things your way rather than going with what society says you can do. Before we get into the conversation, I will take a moment to promote the foundation that Anna started, which is just incredible. It's called Raising Rio Foundation, and I will leave the links in the show notes. But just to tell you a little bit about what it is, Raising Rio Foundation is on a mission to empower single mothers with an emphasis on mothers of color in birth, education, and becoming the best version of themselves. Through the foundation, these women can apply for a scholarship for education, learn ways to be more financially savvy, find work, and develop themselves, and also help other mothers around the globe with maternal and health care. So again, Anna is just an amazing person. She's doing so much, not just for her son, but for women in general, for these single moms, and I think her story is incredible. I hope you enjoy this episode, and without any further ado, here are Sean and Anna.
All right, welcome to the podcast. We're here with Anna. Anna, tell us a little bit about yourself, where you're from, what's going on in your life right now.
Hello, everyone. I'm Anna, as you have heard, and I am a single mom living in Utah currently, studying my master's in communications and also getting a side teaching certificate. I've been teaching on and off for about 5 years and working in the education system for 10 years as either a mentor, tutor, or a sports coach, and then kind of toiled around with different careers. I've been a personal trainer for 10 years and working in the fitness industry for 10 years. And then finally, after trying about in the police force, decided to stick to teaching, which I absolutely love. Currently, I am a teacher teaching junior high health and physical education, and also coaching sports. I absolutely love it. It took me a while to get to where I am, but I'm super excited to be where I am currently. But one of the things that I struggle with is figuring out being a single mom and doing everything while providing for my son and also having to have him be in daycare with all the stigma that comes with single moms. Especially for me, I know a lot of times, even when I was pregnant, I had some issues because I am African-American and a single mom, and there's a stigma that I, you know, just have babies, right, daddies, and I want to take advantage of the government, which the government hasn't been super helpful. Right. And it's just been a lot. And then there's just the stigma that, you know, my son is going to grow up with behavior issues, and am I doing enough? And there's just so much to it. And is my son going to have drug and alcohol problems just because I'm a single mom? And, you know, is marriage the only way through this? And in my dating world has been horrible. And I don't know, I feel like I'm trying to do my best and take care of my son, but there's just so much to it that parenting becomes really challenging.
You feel like there's a lot of weight on your shoulders.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a lot. One of the things that I find helps quite a bit on the foundational level is understanding your preferences, your personality, some of those core traits. A lot of the time in society, I think we're doing a lot better job And it's 2020. We have a lot more understanding of mental health, all that kind of stuff. But we still have some of those ideas and beliefs that we have to adapt to society and the world and our circumstances, which definitely we do. But one of the things that I want to kind of get out there and help people understand is that we have core needs. I like to call them preferences, things that we prefer and how we are, patterns. And we don't have to change that. Matter of fact, it's a lot easier to go with that, to go find the flow. Have you had any experiences with either the Enneagram or any of the other? And what do you? How do you feel about that if you have?
I have taken the Enneagram test and a few personality tests, and I can see myself a little bit in all the personalities, and I think that's something. So I read through them and I'm like, oh, well, I can see that. I can see that about me. And I generally almost always get similar characteristics in every test that I take. So I can see that it is accurate. But every time I read through it, like, sometimes it's hard to hear the negative about yourself too.
And right.
So I'm like, ah, do I really act like that? Or do I really do that? But I can see the logic in it and how understanding it, you know, I also did the love language tests and those different things. I can see the value of understanding those.
No, all those are great, because it does. The foundational thing is it's awareness. It's understanding you. So when we talk anything about parenting, or we talk anything about relationships, and I even mean relationships with ourselves, that's huge, which is often overlooked in relationship counseling or relationship self-help, is understanding and the relationship you have with yourself, which kind of starts a lot of the time with acceptance. Oh, wow, I have some faults and that's hard to swallow. But that's kind of what keeps us balanced. And that's what I heard you just say. You're like, oh, sometimes it's hard to accept some of the negative things. But if we don't accept some of those, well, let's call them something else. Let's call them opportunities. Or, I mean, you can call them weaknesses. But therein again, actually tells us who you are. More about who you are. So if it's hard for us to hear some of those negative things, I mean, what does that say about us? What does that say about you? Sometimes maybe it's a little too sensitive. So what if we started there? Working on the sensitivities that we have about ourselves, right? So we all want to like think that we're doing well and successful, but sometimes that's way out of reach. You probably see this in coaching. There's a progress of learning. I don't know. Do you see that when you're coaching your athletes or students?
Yeah, definitely. And I do believe there is the famous basketball coach. Is it Woody?
Wooden.
Yeah, Wooden. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Yes. And he always says that you got to start with the basics and bring out the basketball and teach them to dribble, even if they're professionals.
Right.
And he said, sometimes we forget to start with the basics. But I don't
right.
know.
No.
I guess that's also part of life where we don't want to, because it seems so easy and we should be able to do the easy things.
Right. So there's another thing. There's another foundational thing. How accepting am I of working on myself? And I use, I don't know if you've ever heard of Occam's Razor. You've heard that term?
No, I haven't.
Occam's Razor, and I'm not an expert by all means in any of this stuff, but Occam's Razor, it's basically the idea that in an issue, in a problem, in a concern, there's a lot of different options to figure it out. But the idea of Occam's Razor is the simplest solution is probably the one that will be the solution. So the one that is the simplest. So, right, KISS, keep it simple. And the idea here is it doesn't have to be complex. We don't have to make it, you know, really, really complex when we're trying to understand ourselves. And we do. We do this all the time. So it's the idea of becoming more aware of who we are. But we don't have to dive in. We don't have to dive into, like, all the things that happened to me in the past, or who am I now, and am I living up to the expectations that I'm supposed to be? It might just be, what are my values outside of what I think society is telling me, or maybe another group is telling me what my values are? Do you feel pressure from other outside sources like family or society or other things to guide what your values really are?
Well, my family, I mean, I'm again, from the personality test and all of them, definitely a people pleaser. I always try to please people, and I thrive off of success. So okay. I definitely think that derives a lot of the pressures that I feel. In addition to that is the religious pressures, right? I'm in a religion that has a lot of pressures on family and marriage, the importance of marriage and the importance of building a family. And so that's key in sometimes the strain that I feel. And then just society, like I said in the beginning, there is a stigma behind single moms. And there may be, they call it strong, but then they also say, but, you know, there's always the issues behind it. But usually it's because they're financially unstable and they struggle, their kids struggle, and they just don't do things right, and they don't spend enough time with their kids, and because the kids are in daycare. And so there is a lot of outside pressures that kind of contribute to me trying to be a certain person, I guess.
So what do you do? What, how do you navigate around that on a normal daily basis, and when it comes kind of barraging in on you and weighing down more than normal, what do you do?
A lot of times I overdo it, right? I try to prove myself by getting involved in everything, right? And now I'm like, oh, I'm a single mom, but I can do this, and I can do this, and I can do this, and I'm a teacher, and I'm a TA, and I, you know, I try to overdo it to try and prove myself, but then I get burnout, and I get depressed, and I get tired, and or I just pretend like I don't care about anything. So there's like, it's just an extreme version. There isn't ever just a middle ground of balance, which is why I'm here talking to you.
Well, I mean, the first thing is understanding that and recognizing that cycle, because we do. We know how we're doing well, and we know where where we're not, where we're kind of messing up. The idea is, are we okay with that? Are we okay? Or is it no, you have to be better. You have to be different. You have to be doing these things. And maybe that's the target, because we can talk all about, and we will in a second to kind of have both sides to this, about exactly what you need to do to, you know, schedule your week or schedule your day, or the details in understanding, you know, how to parent, what to say, what not to say, when, and all that kind of thing. But if we don't have some of those fundamentals, then it might all be not a waste, but we're fighting against the grain. We're going against the grain. We want to find the flow. Now, we won't always have a flow, but you mentioned a few things. For example, you are someone who, will always be looking to do things and be productive. So one of the things I would suggest is use that term. Okay, productive. I always feel like I need to be productive. Right? Okay, do I need to feel productive? Do I want to feel productive? What's the difference? And you might do some journaling. There's a lot of really neat science behind journaling. Journaling with your non-dominant hand, journaling with your dominant hand in colors as opposed to a pencil as opposed to a pen. Find the things where, I'll give you an example of why that's even kind of relevant. I'm kind of old school. I'm 44 years old. I was born in the 70s. I went to school in the 80s. We had pencil and paper, right? Everything now is like, get out the laptop. open up Word, type, 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 type. But when I want to get in kind of a zone, I'll grab a Ticonderoga nicely sharpened wood pencil and a piece of paper, and I just start writing. And the idea is there that that's my who I was in growing up. That's kind of nostalgic. It brings up emotions and it widens my focus. So these are little interesting, weird kind of nuances that we can put into this. But the idea here is to be able to open up your awareness. So the word productivity in your specific case, as a type three is going to be a big word, that word productivity. When I say that word, what does that bring up to you? Just the words and saying it.
Making sure that, I don't know, I'm on top of my game. Productivity is like never being lazy.
So talk about the feelings though of productivity. So you made the word productivity productive. Now let's talk about what does it bring up to you in your feelings?
I don't know. I feel like if I'm ever lazy, then I get frustrated with myself and I feel like I could be doing more. But sometimes I get frustrated too because people are like, oh, it's okay to be lazy sometimes. And I'm like, well, what is the extent of laziness? Right. It's just taking a bath, or can I like literally not do anything for an entire day? I don't really know. Like, what are the boundaries?
So you bring up another good point is this idea of permission. So often you're thinking about what other people will see you as. Now, I'm not judging that. That's sometimes a core thing for a lot of people. The idea of validation. And so we don't necessarily want to fight against that, but we can use it to our advantage. Is it my lazy time? And I'm not going to be judged for it. And if I am, that doesn't matter because I'm being productive at being lazy. Or you change the term around because lazy is actually a judgment term. When you're calling somebody lazy, that's a negative connotation because lazy implies that you're not being productive. So one of the ways that some people will look at this is going, okay, so I need to now not overdo it so I burn out. What if I planned in strategic times for self-care? And I know you do this. We all do this. But being more intentional, we're going to get to the next piece of this in a second, because we can be intentional on our behaviors. So for example, you know, today's Saturday. So you might have scheduled out your day because you want to be productive, but you don't want to overdo it. You don't want to feel burnout. You don't want to feel pressure. So during that time, you will then plan in times where you can be productive at being lazy. But change that word from lazy to self-care, being productive in those times. So now the word productive or productivity doesn't have a negative connotation. It can have a neutral, positive or negative, depending on how you're looking at it. So we can do those things with our behaviors. The next step, though, in awareness is doing those things with our thoughts and our beliefs. So if I have a thought or a belief that I have to be productive, that's going to guide what I do. But what if I challenged that thought like I would challenge being lazy? I mean, what does it mean to be lazy? Everybody has a different perspective on that. What does it mean to be lazy to you?
To not be productive.
Give me a specific.
So I have a hard time with this too, because I don't know. Sometimes when I hear self-care, they're always like, yeah, make sure you have self-care. And I think of like pampering parties and I'm like, but I'm not really into that.
Okay.
I don't really do pampering. So I don't really know what self-care means. So for me, lazy is just literally sleeping all day. But then sometimes I really just need to sleep.
Yeah, no, exactly.
So I don't really know. It's really hard for me to define all these terms. And I think that's why I'm so hard on myself, because I don't know. And I used to be like obsessive. Like I had a planner in every single purse, a planner in my backpack. I had like 12 planners and it was listed out. And now I try to put it all on my phone. Now I'm going back to planners. And I used to be obsessed and had tried to like tone it down a little bit. But then I feel less productive. Like I said, I'm very much a checkmark person. I have to just be checking things off. And I had, then people would be like, oh, well, it's okay. If you, as long as you check off some things, you don't have to check off everything and you're still a good mom. But then I'm like, no, because those things are still important. So it's frustrating that you tell me that it's okay not to do them because they're still important to do. And you're just saying, you know, so it's hard to like really put the lines in of like what's being lazy, what's okay, and then to the point of like, okay, yeah, self-care is good, but you still need to do things, if that makes sense.
Well, you bring up a couple really, really good points, because you're always going to have that drive to be productive. I'll give you an example. We'll use the Enneagram a little bit for the reason of understanding ourselves. I'm a type 7. Productivity is whatever I'm doing. I mean, if I'm sleeping, I'm productive. If I'm running a race, driving a car, making deliveries, working, I'm productive. If I'm sitting and scrolling through my phone, I'm productive. So my personality redefines productivity all the time. So it's hard for me to tell you what productivity is because I see it differently. My lens is different. So when you're hearing somebody tell you or give you advice or give you an understanding of what you should be doing, one of the things to do is understand who they are and where they're coming from. What that'll do is that'll lessen maybe some of that weight that they'll put on you. It's like, oh, well, they see the world a little bit differently, so I'll just take that with a grain of salt. The point here is you trying to understand you understanding what your definition of productivity is, you understanding what your definition of self-care is. I know you do them. You said earlier when we were talking, you like to go on hikes. Is that true?
Yes.
Yes. So. Did you even hear how you said that? There was so much feeling and emotions into that. Then scheduling in hikes or even things that are similar to it. Because sometimes you can't go on a hike, right? If it dumps 12 feet, unless you're a snowshoer, I guess. There's nothing wrong with that. But getting out even just to a park and walking around, that whole idea is expanding this idea of self-care specifically for you. You can listen to other people. Well, you need to do this and you need to do that. Well, okay. You know, that they're coming from their perspective. So here's what I'm suggesting to you right now is taking some time and being productive about learning who you are, learning more about you, and using that productivity for your awareness, for your values. What do you value? Well, I value these things. Now, you'll hear them from other people and other organizations, society as a whole. But you'll still go back to, well, does that fit with what I value? And slowly you should be able to go have a disconnect from a lot of these things that are out there in society telling us all the time what to do, telling you should be doing this and we should be doing that. So having ownership, that's another word that maybe you could look into as well. It's like, what do I really own in my life? What do I really, meaning like my values? Or am I always working on something else? I don't know if that made any sense.
I agree. I do need to figure out myself. I think that in itself is an issue for me as well, because that's another stigma, you know, right? Hey, you're 31 years old. You should have a house by now. You should, you know, you should have your life figured out. You should be in a career. And what are you doing to contribute to society? And I think that it's a lifelong game, I guess, of figuring yourself out and being patient with it.
Right. So understanding yourself, that's kind of one of our first principles. even in the realm of parenting, that's because that's very specific, but just understanding yourself, knowing who you are. Because if you understand yourself and you know who you are and what you stand for and your values specifically, then as you move through life and make choices, they'll be yours and you will own them. Yeah, you'll be influenced by others, but you'll own them. Then as you parent, you'll own that. It's yours. And that feels really, really good.
Wow, what an amazing, amazing story and so many great insights in this week's episode. If I were to pinpoint some of my takeaways, I would definitely have to say one of them is doing parenthood your style, like not worrying about what you were raised to do or what culture thinks you should do, but actually just kind of doing your parenting truth, living your truth as a parent. I really feel like Sean was encouraging Anna to do that as she is navigating this time as a single mother and this role as a single mother, just affirming her and helping her to understand that it's okay for her to parent the way that's right for her, not for somebody else. Don't worry about living up to societal expectations, but you know, do what you innately know you want to do and just own that. I really feel like many, many parents need to hear that. And I feel like it's important for parents to understand that they can trust themselves. Like they have an inner compass. We believe that you do. And as you know yourself and understand what's important to you, you'll be able to live out of that truth even more. So again, we just really appreciate your support of the podcast. Thank you so much for listening. If you have a quick moment and you can give us a review or a rating on Apple Podcasts, we would really appreciate it. And once again, please go and support Anna, her foundation. I will leave her links in the show notes. She is just doing incredible things, and I think it's definitely a worthy cause to support. So again, thank you so much for joining us. And as always, here's to authentic and intentional parenting. We'll see you at the next episode. Last but not least, the advice provided on this podcast does not constitute or serve as a substitute for professional psychological treatment, therapy, or other types of professional advice or intervention. If you have concerns about your child's well-being, consult a physician or mental health professional.